More than 2 million people became internally displaced by the insurgency in Nigeria's northeast. Hundreds of thousands were also forced to flee to neighboring Lake Chad Basin countries. Borno State is the epicenter of the violence. The result of this is that it is most affected by the displacements and has had to host a great number of displaced persons in camps across several garrison towns. Isa Zakaria, a husband of three wives and father of 13 children, took shelter in Bekasi camp in Maiduguri, the state capital. But this was until the last quarter of 2021, when the state government escalated the resettlement drive and closure of camps. Despite being unhappy with the move, Isa has no option but to comply and move to Goza, where he used to have a thriving provision store before his home and store were razed down by Boko Haram 7 years ago. Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I am Maryam Mustafa. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the country and answer the tough questions around them. This week, I am here with my colleagues, Murtala Abdullahi and Hawa Shafi Nuhu.
Thank you, Maryam. This week, we'll be looking at the ongoing relocation and resettlement of displaced people, as well as the closure of camps in Maiduguri by the state government. We will also discuss the security and humanitarian risks facing returnees.
So since our previous conversation last year on the resettlement program, at least six camps in Maiduguri, including Bekasi, Stadium, NYSC, and Teacher Village camps have already been closed. Others awaiting relocation are the Dalori camps and Gubbio Road camp. The state government was unable to meet the initial plans to shut down camps in Maiduguri by the end of December 2021, although it has facilitated the movement of thousands of people from camps in Maiduguri to communities in different parts of the state.
The state actually has an ambitious plan to close all camps by 2025. The goal is to have IDPs returned or relocated to their local governments or communities by that time. The conversation really around the relocation and resettlement of refugees and IDPs is quite intense when you look at it for both the actors involved because of the sensitive nature. And the state government is concerned about people staying for a long period of time in these camps. It also sees relocation as an important step towards providing people with opportunities to rebuild their lives by engaging in economic activities instead of depending on aid. Why the idea behind the government's plan to accelerate the transition and rehabilitation of these communities is understandable. There are concerns about the lack of sufficient support packages for returnees and the fluid security situation in some of these locations. Another issue is the inability of some returnees to move back to their former communities. What this means is that their predicament as displaced persons will only be transferred from Maiduguri to the next location where they will be hosted.
Speaking more on the conditions of displaced people and returnees is our colleague Hawa Shafi Nuhu. She has extensively covered their plight in her reports. Hawa, what are your thoughts on the relocation and resettlement program?
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. So the Borno State government has said that the major reason for the camp's closure is the need to, you know, help displaced people transition into a normal life. So it has tried to plan their transportation to either their original communities or in some cases entirely new communities. It has also announced that it is giving the heads of households 100,000 naira each, you know, just the general plans to help facilitate the resettlement. But speaking with IDPs has revealed to me that though they do want to go back home, they actually have different concerns regarding the relocation. For example, they're concerned about their safety, they're concerned about the fact that the monetary assistance they were promised has not been fully shared with them, the fact that cars or, you know, trucks are not always available to transport them. They're also concerned about the fact that even the roads that lead to places like Baga are not fully open yet, and then the fact that their access to fishing, which is like one of their main sources of income, has been severely affected. So what we can see, I think, from this is that though the resettlement plans are, you know, goodwilled, there is a gap between the ideation and effective implementation.
Thank you, Hawa, for your insights and also for joining us in this conversation. There's a bumpy road ahead for returnees, and this could be aggravated by the state government's prohibition of humanitarian organizations from distributing relief items to displaced persons in resettled communities. The thought behind the approach is to empower people, but this may increase the risk of food insecurity if the various stakeholders don't find sustainable measures to support the people in resettled communities.
What we can say is that challenges are really enormous when you look at it from different angles. So for example, difficulty accessing farmlands or lake for fishing, and the additional risks along the logistics routes between these towns. In order to really capture the best interests of the returnees and the residents of these communities, there's a need for multi-sectoral coordination to support the resettlement and also sustainability of the effort.
This is an episode of Human Angle Crisis Room. Thank you for listening. I am Maryam Mustafa. Join in next week for another episode, wherever you listen to your podcast. Members of our production team are Murtala Abdullahi, Anthony Asemota, and Anita Eboigbe. The executive producer is Ahmed Salkida.